So we're going to Daniel tonight. I don't remember how far I went in Daniel the other night. We just talked a little bit about it, right? Well, I'll talk about it again. So Daniel was taken captive as a very young man. And when you read different things like Bullinger, or you read Bible dictionaries, or even commentaries, they'll talk about, they'll call them pre-captivity and post-captivity, or pre-exilic and post-exilic prophets, meaning, you know, they got exiled. And that means after the captivity of Babylon and Assyria. So David is a post-exilic prophet, as was Ezekiel. They both got taken into captivity. We just finished Ezekiel last week. And a little bit about Babylon. Babylon was a gigantic city. The walls were estimated to be 300 to 350 foot high and 80 feet wide. Now, I don't think they were solid, because what they would do is they would have alcoves and storage and stables and all kinds of stuff in the walls. But at one part, or two parts of the wall, and it wasn't exactly a square, but it was about 81 square miles. It was 9 by 9 by 9, but you know, it's not a perfect square. I looked up Philadelphia. Philadelphia is 132 square miles. So it was a little smaller than Philadelphia. But it was an ancient city, so for the ancient times, that's a gigantic city. And you know, they didn't have electricity or running water like we have, or all the modern, you know, sewage and all that. So they had to figure all this stuff out, which apparently they did. Including the Tower of Babylon, which was in the city, which was way higher than the walls, because Nebuchadnezzar's wife was from a mountainous area, and when he brought her to the plains of whatever it's called in Babylon, there's flat, she said, "I miss the mountains." So he built the Tower of Babel, which had the famous hanging gardens. It was supposedly very beautiful. So it must have been, you know, well, it was over 300, 350 feet up, because it overlooked overlooked the walls. I don't know how the heck they got up and down. Maybe they had some kind of contraption, you know. Well, yeah, they had pulleys and stuff, and they may have had some kind of elevator system or something. Who knows? I don't know that. But it was a big city, and it was pretty much self-contained. The river Euphrates ran through it, and there was an iron gate on one wall so that nobody could come in, and there was an iron gate on the other side, so the river could flow through. And there were areas where they could grow food and graze animals and stuff. So David was a prophet of the captivity. Daniel. Okay, so let's start in verse 1, because this gives us a little understanding of stuff. It says in verse 1, "In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it." Now, if you hold your place here, we'll get an idea of the, you know, so it's the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, okay? So 2 Kings 24. In verse 1, beep, beep, it says, "In his days, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up, and Jehoiakim became his servant 3 years. Then he turned and rebelled against him. And the Lord sent against him bands of the Chaldees, and bands of the Syrians and bands of the Moabites and bands of the children of Ammon, and sent them against Judah to destroy it, according to the word of the Lord, which he spake by his servants and the prophets. Surely at the commandment of the Lord came this upon Judah, to remove them out of his sight for the sins of Manasseh, according to all that he did. So that was the reason that it happened, and it was in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim. And also for the innocent blood that he, Manasseh, had shed, for he filled Jerusalem with innocent blood, which the Lord would not pardon. Now remember, Manasseh was a horrible king. He got taken captive, taken away, and he turned back to God, and then God put him back on the throne because he cried to God and repented. But he didn't forgive all those sins that he did. So they're paying a price. Now the rest of the acts of Jehoiakim and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Judah? Let's go to 2 Chronicles 36. And verse 4. And the king of Egypt made Eliakim his brother king over Judah and Jerusalem, and turned his name to Jehoiakim. So that's where he came from. And Necho took Jehoahaz his brother and carried him to Egypt. And Jehoiakim was 25 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 11 years in Jerusalem, and he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord his God. Against him came up Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and bound him in fetters to carry him to Babylon. So, the third year he rebelled, right? And then the 11th year, Nebuchadnezzar took him away because he reigned 11 years. Fetters means what? Chains, right? Mm-hmm. Or bindings of some sort. Nebuchadnezzar also carried of the vessels of the house of the Lord to Babylon and put them in his temple at Babylon. Now the rest of the acts of Jehoiakim and his abominations which he did, and that which was found in him, behold, they are written in the book of Kings of Israel and Judah, and Jehoiakim his son reigned in his stead. Remember, Jehoiakim is the guy that Jeremiah, he took the penknife and tore up the scroll and threw it in the fire. So, okay. Then we go to Ezekiel chapter 1. Chapter 1, verse 1. Now it came to pass in the 13th year, in the 4th month, in the 5th day of the month, as I was among the captives by the river of Chebar, that the heavens were opened, and I saw visions of God. In the 5th day of the month, which was the 5th year of King Jehoiakim's captivity. Okay? So that gives us a little idea of time. So back to Daniel. So again, the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels unto the house of his God. So we kind of have the idea of what's going on. This is the progressive captivity. He didn't just come in and take everything at once, but they came back numerous times and took captives, and eventually just, there was nothing left except a remnant, which Jeremiah took, which we read a little bit about, and Jeremiah survived with a remnant. And it was the poor people that were left behind, the uneducated, the poor people, whatever. Anybody that was not profitable to Babylon, they kind of left. The sick and the lame and, all the rest. Verse 3, and the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel and of the king's seed and of the princes. Okay, so that tells us what group of people Daniel belongs to. Certain of the children of Israel and of the king's seed and of the princes. So the upper class, the educated, the talented, those kind of people. Now I want to tell you about eunuchs real quick, because people have an idea of what a eunuch is, but there's more to it. It's the word in, I can't even read my own writing, Sanis or Saris, I'm not sure, S-A-R or S-A-N-I, I think it's S-A-N-I-S.
S-A-R-I-S.
S-A-R-I-S, okay, thank you. The primary meaning is court officer. The secondary meaning is a castrate or eunuch. Okay. The Bible Dictionary said from Herodotus, we learn that in Eastern countries, eunuchs are valued as being specially trustworthy in every way. Such persons were frequently employed by Eastern rulers as officers of the household. Hence, in the Old Testament, it's sometimes difficult to know which of the two meanings is intended or whether both are implied. There is no necessity to assume that Daniel and his companions were castrates, for they were without blemish. Matthew 19. If you hold your place there again and go to Matthew 19, Jesus Christ spoke about eunuchs. Interestingly enough, Matthew 19, 12. This is Jesus Christ speaking. We'll start in verse 10. His disciples say unto him, if the case of a man be so with his wife, is it not good to marry? But he said unto them, all men cannot receive this saying, save they to whom it is given. For there are some eunuchs which were born from their mother's womb. And there were some eunuchs which were made eunuchs of men. And there be eunuchs which have made themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven's sake. He that is able to receive it, let him receive it. So some people are born eunuchs, meaning they don't have maybe sexual desire. Okay? There are some that are made eunuchs that are castrated. And there are some that make themselves eunuchs. They restrain themselves so that they can serve. In this case, he's talking about the kingdom of God. Let's go back to Daniel. So this master of the eunuchs was not necessarily a castrate. Now, obviously, there were some like that, obviously, because that's the general understanding of it. And they were especially important. And we're going to see it somewhere in here where I think we'll look in Esther later, where the guard of the women was. You know, if he's a eunuch, he can't accost the women, obviously. Okay? So, verse 4, children in whom was no blemish. So that's where that came from. Daniel and the others, Meshach, Shadrach, Abednego, there was no blemish. You know, no scars, no anything like that. But well-favored, no blemish means they were, no blemish, no scars, no deformities. Well-favored means nice appearance and skillful in all wisdom, etc. Cunning in knowledge and understanding science and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. In the NIV, it says, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand and qualified to serve in the king's palace. So that's the kind of guy that these kids were. They were young, and they got them young so that they could train them up, right? And the younger you get a child, the more you can affect them and mold them to what you want them to be, especially in those kinds of situations, right? It wasn't like there was any rebellion in those days like teenagers today. If you rebelled, you were done. And the alternatives were not so great. And if you obeyed and you excelled, you lived a pretty good life. So, verse 5. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and one of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. So they're going to have a 3 year period of where they're going to, feed them and work with them and get them ready to meet the king. Now among these were the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names, for he gave unto Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah Shadrach, and to Mishael of Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego. I think a couple of years ago in family camp, Kobe taught about that, and those were names that related to gods in Babylon. So now it says, but Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore, he requested the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. He purposed in his heart, in the very depths of his being, he obviously already had some kind of relationship and understanding of God. And he was very committed to, doing what he was supposed to do. So he was not going to defile himself with this food because, the Jews had very strict dietary laws and restrictions. I'm sure among the things that they were feeding him was pork, right? Most countries outside of Judaism and Muslims eat pork because pork, animal. Pigs are easy to raise, they get fat, provide a lot of meat, and they're not so expensive. Well, that's the truth. But also, this food was not blessed by the priests, right? It wasn't in any way. Now, God had brought Daniel into the favor and tender love with the prince of eunuchs. He was a good student. He was obedient. He did all the things he's supposed to. And this prince of the eunuchs loved him. He had a tender favor and tender love. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord, the king, who hath appointed your meat and your drink, for why should he see your faces worse liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall ye make me endanger my head to the king. He's saying, if you don't eat what he gave you and you look the worse for it, it's my head. This is a big thing you're asking me. Then said Daniel to Melzar, whom the priests of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. Pulses, I don't know.
I've read it sprouts.
Sprouts, yeah.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Salads, a vegetarian type of diet. And water. Then let our countenance be looked upon before thee, and the countenance of the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat, and as thou seest, deal with thy servants. So he said, okay, well, give us a trial. Give us 10 days, see how it works out. We'll see what goes on. So he consented to them in this matter and proved them 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, their countenance appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat. Thus Meltzar took away the portion of their meat and the wine that they would drink and gave them pulse. I bet the other kids loved Daniel and those guys for doing that, huh? They're, you know, they're eating like kings, drinking wine, and Daniel says, I don't want that. They look better than the other kids, and so the guy takes everything away from them. As for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days that the king had said he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. And the king communed with them, and among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. And Daniel continued even unto the first year of King Cyrus. So God gave them knowledge. You know, God worked with them. He showed them. He helped them. So we see that Daniel had this great relationship with God early on. And so he was taken as a young man, and he continued to serve. And it says Daniel communed even the first year until the first year of King Cyrus. And that gives us another timeline. So Daniel was taken as a young man, maybe 12, 13 years old, and continued to serve through different kings and dynasties through the time of Cyrus. So after Nebuchadnezzar, there were kings, and then the Medes and Persians came in. So if you hold your place there and go to Daniel 10, verse 1, it says, in the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a thing was revealed unto Daniel, whose name was called Belteshazzar, and the thing was true, but the time appointed was long, and he understood the thing, and he had understanding of the vision. So this is the third year of Cyrus the king. Okay, so it says he served through the first year. Well, we know he was there through the third year. Okay. Well, let's go back to Ezra. That's before Psalms. Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, Job, Psalms. So after Chronicles and before Nehemiah. Ezra, chapter 1. Hopefully we'll get to Ezra at some point, unless the Lord returns. Now, in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, chapter 1, verse 1, sorry. Now, in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah might be fulfilled, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, that he had made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom, and put it also in writing, saying, and he goes on and talks about stuff about the Lord God in heaven hath given me this kingdom. Okay? And then let's go to Isaiah 44. Remember these, O Jacob and Israel, how thou art my servant. I have formed thee, thou art my servant. O Israel, thou shalt not be forgotten of me. I have blotted out as a thick cloud thy transgressions, and as a cloud thy sins. Return unto me, for I have redeemed thee. Sing, O ye heavens, for the Lord hath done it. Shout, ye lower parts of the earth. Break forth into saying, ye mountains. O forest and every tree therein, for the Lord hath redeemed Jacob and glorified himself in Israel. Thus saith the Lord, thy Redeemer, he that formed thee from the womb, I am the Lord that maketh all things, that stretcheth forth the heavens alone, that spreadeth abroad the earth by itself, that frustrateth the tokens of the liars and maketh diviners mad, that turneth wise men backward and make their knowledge foolish, that confirmed the word of his servant and performeth the counsel of his messengers, referring to, you know, God's prophets and stuff, that saith to Jerusalem, thus shalt thou be inhabited, to the cities of Judah you shall be built, and I will raise up the decayed places thereof, that saith to the deep, be dry, and I will dry up thy rivers, that saith to Cyrus, he is my shepherd, and shall perform all my pleasure, even saying in Jerusalem, thou shalt be built, and to the temple thy foundation shall be laid. Now, this is a prophecy of the future, right? Because when was Isaiah was in the time of Hezekiah, right? He's a long time before the captivity, but he had already prophesied of the captivity coming. And then God saying, well, you're going to get captivity. And somewhere in here, it talks about the 70 years of captivity. And then he says, I'm going to bring you back. I'm going to redeem you. And he names Cyrus as the guy that's going to do the work for him. And then in 45, it says, thus saith the Lord to his anointed, to Cyrus, whose right hand I have holden to subdue nations before him, I will loose the loins of kings to open before him the two-leaved gates, and the gates shall not be shut. So he calls Cyrus anointed. How about that? He calls him a Messiah, because that's what the Hebrew word for anointed was, Messiah. Pretty interesting. And this is all in the future. Okay, back to Daniel. So Daniel's going to be there over, he's 12, 13 when he gets captured, and he's there when the people go back, okay? Because he lives through the period of Cyrus. So he spent the whole 70 years of captivity there, or most of it. Don't know exactly when he was taken. I have it in here somewhere probably. But, and in the second year, chapter 2, wow, took a long time to get here. We may not get through all this. Daniel 2, verse 1. And in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar dreamed dreams, wherewith his spirit was troubled, and his sleep brake from him. Sounds like some people I know. Then the king commanded to call the magicians, and the astrologers, and the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans, for to show the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king. Magicians. Magicians was the office of those who repelled demons and evil spirits by incantations. Astrologers were prophets who assumed to announce the will of heaven and predict the future. And sorcerers were wizards. And I'm not sure what Chaldeans were other than Chaldeans. I guess they were the elite, you know, well-educated
politicians,
royal family, that kind of thing. I'm not sure because I didn't find any explanation for that. So he calls them all together for to show the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king. So this was a big deal to Nebuchadnezzar, right? He had these dreams and he wants to know what it's all about. So the guys that are supposed to know, you know, these magicians, astrologers, and sorcerers and Chaldeans, he calls them in, stands them before him in his throne, And the king said unto them, verse 3, I have dreamed a dream, and my spirit is troubled to know the dream. The word spirit there would mean the spirit of man, you know, just, you know, life, soul life. Then spake the Chaldeans to the king of in Syriac, O king, live forever. O king, live forever. Tell thy servants the dream, and we shall show the interpretation. Syriac is Aramaic. There's two dialects. When it says Syriac, it's Western Aramaic, and when it's Chaldee, it's Eastern Aramaic. So it's Aramaic, but there were different dialects. Still spoken today in some places in the Middle East. A very ancient language. Some debate whether Aramaic is the oldest language or Hebrew. And I don't know that anybody really knows for sure. There's good arguments for both. So anyway, he says, you know, stand before me. Tell the servants the dream, and we shall show the interpretation. So they say, all right, well, tell us your dream. You know, what did you dream about? And we'll interpret it. King answered and said to the Chaldeans, the thing is gone from me. If ye will not make known unto me the dream, with the interpretation thereof, ye shall be cut in pieces, and your houses shall be made a dunghill. Wow, what a choice. What a choice. That put these guys between a rock and a hard place. They're just not, they don't have an idea. But if you show the dream and the interpretation thereof, ye shall receive of me gifts and rewards and great honor. Therefore, show me the dream and the interpretations thereof. They answered again and said, let the king tell his servants the dream, and we shall the interpretation of it. King answered and said, I know of certainty that ye would gain the time, because ye see the thing is gone from me. Sorry. Gain the time. Gain the time. From what we understand, maybe a reference to a lucky day or an unlucky day. If you hold your place here, go to Esther, chapter 3. Esther is right after what we read in Ezra and Nehemiah. Esther. Right before Job. Esther, chapter 3, verse 7. In the first month, that is the month of Nisan, in the 12th year of King Ahasuerus, they cast Pur, that is the lot, before Haman, from day to day and from month to month, to the 12th month, that is the month of Adar. They cast a lot. Pur is the Aramaic word for a lot. And they cast it. This refers to the monthly prognosticators, so as to fix the fortunate times. Now, we'll go to Isaiah 47. No, I have my own. Isaiah 47. Verse 1. Come down and sit in the dust, O virgin daughter of Babylon. Sit on the ground. There is no throne, O daughter of the Chaldeans, for thou shalt no more be called tender and delicate. Okay? And then we're going to jump to verse 11. Therefore shalt evil come upon thee. Thou shalt not know from whence it riseth, and mischief shall fall upon thee. Thou shalt not be able to put it off. And desolation shall come upon thee suddenly, which thou shalt not know. Stand now this with thine enchantments, and with the multitude of thy sorceries, wherein thou hast labored from thy youth. If it be so, if so be thou shalt be able to profit, if so be thou mayest prevail. Thou art wearied in the multitude of thy counsels. Let now the astrologers, the stargazers, the monthly prognosticators stand up and save thee from these things that shall come upon thee. So that's what these guys did in Babylon. You know, if you think about it, you ever know anybody that was really into astrology? They won't do things on certain times, right? They look to see when, you know, when the moon aligns with, you know, Aquarius, right, the age of Aquarius, all that crap. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what they did. And that goes all the way back to Babylon. Mm-hmm. Goes all the way back to these guys and the astrologers. And, you know, when the moon was in a certain phase, that was a good time. When it was in another phase, it was a bad time. When these stars lined up a certain way, it was bad. And so on and so forth. So they were constantly studying. And that's what he says here. They were looking to gain time. They were looking to find the lucky day. That's what they were doing. It's kind of crazy. So, and, you know, in Isaiah, it shows us this future prophecy of Babylon that eventually it's going to go down. But right now, at the time of Daniel, it's the most powerful empire in the world. They control everything. Okay? So the king answered, I know certainly that you would gain the time because you see the thing is gone from me. So you're looking to gain time to find the lucky day that maybe you'll be able to get out of this. But if you will not make known unto me the dream, there is but one decree for you. For ye have prepared lying and corrupt words to speak before me till the time be changed. You know, you're putting it off and you're trying to talk your way around it until you get to the lucky day. Okay? And he sees through it. Therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can show me the interpretation thereof. So he's putting them their backs to the wall, and they're trying to talk their way around it to try to get to this good day, and they can't do it. The Chaldeans answered before the king and said, there is not a man upon the earth that can show the king's matter. Therefore, there is no king, lord, nor ruler that asks such things at any magician or astrologer or Chaldean. What are they saying? Nobody can do this. You're asking an impossible thing. So, verse 11, and it is a rare thing that the king requireth, and there is none other that can show it before the king except the gods, whose dwelling is not with flesh. So they recognized and they said, the only way you're going to find out about this is from the gods, who don't dwell with man. For this cause, the king was angry and very furious and commanded to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. And the decrees went forth that the wise men should be slain, and they sought Daniel and his fellows to be slain because they were included, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, or whatever their names were, Mishael, Hananiah, and Azael. They were included with the wise men because they had grown up a little over time. They had proven themselves before the king. They had stood before the king, and they were included in this group, although they weren't before the king when he had them stand there. Then Daniel answered with counsel and wisdom to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, which was gone forth to slay the wise men of Babylon. He answered and said to Arioch, the king's captain. Okay, this you're going to see this several times in here. It's where he answered, and it really means he said to. And then the whatever he said is stated in the context. It's just an idiom. He answered and said to Arioch. Arioch didn't ask a question, right?
Yeah.
But it means he asked, or he was talking to Arioch, The king's captain, why is the decree so hasty from the king? Then Arioch made the thing known to David. I'm Daniel. Then Daniel went in and desired of the king that he should give him time and that he would show the king the interpretation. So Daniel's pretty bold, and he's, you know, he's putting his neck on the line, right? He's going out and he's, you know, we're here, we love God, we serve God, he'll help us. Then Daniel went to his house and made the thing known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, that they would desire the mercies of God of heaven concerning the secret. The word secret is the word mysteries. It's musteron in the Septuagint. So that's what they did. They went to God. They desired, they prayed to God for his mercy, for his help, and to show him the mystery, that Daniel and his fellow servants should not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, or from ages to ages, for wisdom and might are his. And he changeth the times and the seasons. He removeth kings and setteth up kings. He giveth wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that know understanding. He revealeth the deep and secret things. He knoweth what is in the darkness, and the light dwelleth with him. I thank thee and praise thee, O thou God of my fathers, who hast given me wisdom and might, that thou mightest, and that hast made known unto me now what we desired of thee, for thou hast now made known unto us the king's matter. Therefore Daniel went in unto Arioch, whom the king had ordained to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said unto him, destroy not the wise men of Babylon, bring me in before the king, and I will show unto the king the interpretation. Then Arioch brought in Daniel. I want to tell you something here. In verse 18, it says the God of heaven. It says, verse 18, says, they would desire mercies of the God of heaven concerning the secret. This is the first occurrence of this statement or phrase is used in 2 Chronicles 36, 23. Now used because his people was lo ami, not my people, and he, Jehovah, had withdrawn from their midst. It is a title peculiar to the times of the Gentiles, while God acts from heaven and not from between the cherubim as Jehovah, the God of Israel, or as the Lord of all the earth, his millennial title. It's used 21 times in the Old Testament. So, do you understand that? He's referring to him as the God of heaven. And before, they never referred to him like that, as a title. But because Israel had turned their back on God, he didn't have that same relationship with them. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like he was sitting in the Holy of Holies in the temple, because they weren't there at the temple anymore. And the high priests weren't doing what they were supposed to do. And Israel wasn't doing what they were supposed to do. So God was removed himself to a higher place, so to speak. Where was I? Verse 25, right? I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Then Arioch brought in Daniel before the king in haste and said thus unto him, I have found a man of the captives of Judah that will make known unto the king the interpretation. That's funny. I have found a man.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't find anything. Daniel came to him and said, I can do this. But Arioch is, you know, getting a little extra bonus from this, maybe. The king answered and said to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, art thou able to make known unto me the dream which I have seen and the interpretations thereof? Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, the secret, the musteron, the mystery, which the king hath demanded, cannot the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, the soothsayers show unto the king? But there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets, mysteries, and maketh known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. Thy dream and thy visions of thy head upon thy bed are these. As for thee, king, O king, thy thoughts came into thy mind upon thy bed, what should come to pass hereafter? And he that revealeth secrets maketh known to thee what shall come to pass. But as for me, the secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have more than any living, but for the sakes that shall make known the interpretation, for their sake shall that shall make the known the interpretation to the king, and from and that thou mightest know the thoughts of thy heart. Thou, O king, sawest, and behold, a great image. The great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible, which means awesome. This image's head was of fine gold, his breast and his arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet part iron and part clay. Thou sawest still that stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet that were of iron and clay, and break them in pieces. When it says a stone was cut without hands, that means it was done by God. Then was the iron, the clay, and the brass, and the silver, and the gold broken to pieces together, and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors. And the wind carried them away, and that no place was found for them. And the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. This is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof, thereof before the king. Thou, O king, art a king of kings, for God of heaven hath given thee kingdom, a kingdom, power, and strength, and glory. He says, you know, the reason you have all this is because of God, Jehovah, or Elohim, I guess, here. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of the heaven, hath he given unto thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over them all. Thou art this head of gold. So Nebuchadnezzar is the head of gold. And after thee shall arise another kingdom inferior to thee, and another third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth. So the second kingdom would be the kingdom of the Medes and Persians, which come in and take over Babylon after Nebuchadnezzar is gone. And the reason it's inferior is Nebuchadnezzar was an absolute and total ruler, whereas the Medes and Persians had rules and laws that the kings had to abide by. They weren't absolute. The third was, would rule over the whole world, would be Rome, or not sure if it's Rome or Greece. I guess it was Greece. And the fourth kingdom shall be, you know, was Alexander the Great. And the fourth kingdom shall be as strong as iron, for as much as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth or crusheth all things. And as iron that breaketh all these shall it break in pieces and bruise. And that would be Rome. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes and part of the potter's clay and part of the iron and kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with the miry clay. And as the toes of the feet were part of the iron and part of the clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. And the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Mm-hmm. And that refers to the millennial kingdom where Jesus Christ rules. For as much as thou sawest that stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it break in pieces, the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God hath made known to the king what shall come to pass hereafter, which means in the future, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure. What a mouthful. He just flabbergasted Nebuchadnezzar. Then the king Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face and worshiped Daniel and commanded that they should offer an oblation and sweet odors unto him. And the king answered unto Daniel and said, of a truth, it is that your God is a God of gods and a Lord of kings and a revealer of secrets or mysteries, seeing thou couldest reveal this secret. Then the king made Daniel a great man and gave him many gifts, great gifts, and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. So now he's over all the magicians, astrologers, wizards, and all the other stuff. Then Daniel requested of the king that, and he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel sat in the gate of the king. So that's what Daniel did. He got the answer from God, and then God blessed him. And then when it says that Nebuchadnezzar made him great, it means he promoted him. He made him in charge of everything, and he sat in the king's gate, which was, you know, a place of honor where he was the main guy for the king. Mm-hmm. So that's where we're going to stop tonight. What a great guy Daniel was. But we see, you know, men of God had to be what? They had to be committed to God. They had to be faithful. They had to have the Spirit of God upon them. And God certainly spoke to Daniel and gave him the answers. He went to God for the answers. He didn't try to figure it out himself. And then God gave him the answers and promoted him. God's the one that really got him all the stuff that he got, because he listened to God. So he was a great man of God, and he served different kings and different administrations. you know, when we change governments, pretty much everybody changes, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the Secretary of Defense, Secretary of State, Secretary of Agriculture, everybody gets cleaned out and new guys come in. Sometimes good, sometimes bad. But in the case of Daniel, he stayed through everybody. Mm-hmm. He continued to serve no matter who was king, no matter who was in charge. They always looked to him because he was the smartest, because he listened to God. Mm-hmm. And for over 70 years, mm-hmm. he lived to a rich old age. So that's it for tonight. Father God, we thank you for this night. We thank you for blessing us and for loving us. Well, what a great God you are. And we just thank you for the great example of Daniel, how he just took a stand as a young man, and you blessed his whole life. And he continued to walk with you and stay faithful all those years. He never looked back. He just stayed steadfast on your word and look to you in every situation. So we thank you for that, and we thank you how you loved him and watched over him, and what a great example he is for us. In the name of your Son, Jesus Christ, amen.